One of them wanted to be the security guy. He claimed he was a security guy.
Welcome to another, infirmed version of Security Guy Radio with Chuck Harrell and his foot. Now, I'm so excited to have you two in the studio today.
I am excited
so
too.
So happy to be here.
Christina Correa, Hillary Weintraub. Hillary, you haven't been here for what, months?
It's been months.
Long time.
Yes.
I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much.
Now, I have a funny Uber story for you.
Okay.
So, I had Mr. Magoo driving me today. Literally. All right? So, I got to Uber around with the foot, Jarvis. You know the foot. I got to take care of Mr. Foot here. So I Ubered out to West Hills. That went okay. But coming back, this guy comes, picks me up. And I got this little cart I showed on the show last week. You know, it's got a handle that folds down. It's like a scooter for your knee. And so I'm standing next to the car, and the guy says, "How am I supposed to put that in the trunk?" "Fear not, my man, because this little thing right here, you push the button, you fold this lever down, it goes underneath the seat, and it compacts down. You slip it right in the trunk." And he says, "Show me that again." So I show it to him. I have my knee on the scooter. And as I'm doing that, he says, "Okay, I understand." He grabs it and pulls it out from under my leg. And I'm going, "What the F are you? Oh, wait a minute, what are you doing?" "Oh, I'm sorry about that." I said, "Yeah, okay." So I didn't fall down. That's good.
Yeah.
Normally I do. Because I was out getting my nose thing fixed today, the nasal surgery on me. It's all a big mess. Anyway, get in the car. I say to him very clearly, "Look, we're going to go right down Victory Boulevard. A straight line, you're going to turn right." "Oh, no, it says we have to get on the freeway." "I don't care what it says. I want you to take the long route to get more money for it." "Oh, okay." So we're driving down Victory Boulevard, right in the middle of the intersection at Victory and Shoop, from the first lane next to the center lane. He decides, "Oh, I have to turn right here," and starts turning right. And then he starts turning left and starts turning right again. I said, "What are you doing?" "Oh, it says I have to go right." I said, "I told you not to go right. I told you drive in a straight line." And all the way down there, he's weaving in and out of traffic. He's putting his brakes on. I'm like, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride in the back seat. I said, "Dude, do you see this giant cast I got on my foot here?" I am very surprised I'm here today, I must say.
Well,
nice guy, but Mr. Jeez. Magoo, completely Mr. Magoo.
Wow.
And I don't like to make fun of my gray-haired brethren. It's myself. However, I'm making Uber auto review that. So anyway.
Oh, you're here.
It's one thing after another. Yeah, it's so exciting.
And you also have that orange bright shirt that I can see a mile away from.
My safety shirt, which I think I called the Donald Trump collection last week, Miss Hillary. Just a joke. I didn't vote for anybody.
Safety first.
So that's where the show is today. So now we had Mr. Logan Clark on today. Logan, I hope you're listening. I apologize. He was out doing a surveillance, and it was pretty big caper, actually around this area, and he wasn't able to get on the studio. We're going to do the Skype thing. We didn't have time, but we happen to have a backup plan, which I think is almost as good and possibly more interesting in one way. And so I'd like to welcome our guest tonight. We're going to talk about human trafficking and sexual slavery. And our guest is Kristen Weiss of the Demand Project. Welcome, Kristen. How are you? There she is. All right. So you are with a thing called the Demand Project. You're out of Oklahoma. You're in Oklahoma. Tulsa? Is that where you are?
Yes.
All right. So tell us about the project. What you guys do? It's very interesting to me.
Well, the way that me and my husband got started was I'm from Colorado, and it was almost 13 years ago. My husband and I were just normal, going to bed at night, watching Channel 9 news, and we heard a story about a dad that had raped his 2-year-old little girl, and he videotaped the rape, and then he put it onto the internet. So back then, the internet was very young. And it was the very end part that really threw us for a loop. Thousands of people logged on to watch. And that was that fist-clenching moment of how are we going to get involved and what are we going to do about it. And that took us on a path. And we found an organization that we helped to start up called Stop Child Trafficking Now. And we worked with them for about 6 years and brought national attention to human trafficking. And we focused on the demand, so we focused on the buyers of the kids for sex. And then 4 years ago, my husband and I decided that we would start our own organization because we really wanted to focus, stay in the States, and focus on not just the buyers and the predators selling the kids, but we also wanted to help in the restoration area. So we started the Demand Project. The Demand Project is called the Demand Project because the demand, if we didn't have a demand, we wouldn't need a product, which are the kids.
Good point. Excellent point.
Yeah. True.
Now, the thing that gets me about this is I saw a lot of this stuff when I was a policeman, things I wish I could unsee.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just beyond comprehension. What I'd like everybody to do that's listening, all five people right now, just kidding, share this to everybody on Facebook, okay? Push that little share button, send it to a friend, send it to a neighbor. Let's get this word out here. I'm all for political activism, but here's my one political comment for the show, Hillary, okay? I'd rather see 700,000 people marching about this than something that might happen. I'm all for what might happen. Let's stop it. This is going on, and this has been going on a long time. And Christina, you have some experience in this area, too, with the trafficking stuff. You've been a spokesperson and stuff.
Yeah, I've been a spokesperson at child exploitation and human trafficking conferences, worked VICE. I mean, dealt with a lot of different things that pertain to human slavery, and pretty sad.
Yeah, now, Kristen and I were talking about this before the show and how Sheriff McDonald of L.A. County had talked to us a couple years ago about this. He's a big expert in it, and he was saying that, you know, L.A. is like the capital of the world for this stuff, and Kristen made a good point. Is that a good thing to be? I mean, and how do you know? Because it's so under the radar. But even Hillary, you did a little research and found out that Orange County is a big community for this, which you were very surprised about.
I was devastated to find out that my own county is one of the top sites for human trafficking, specifically sex slavery, that they would, because of the money and affluence that's in the area, they would bring their, you know, the slaves or the product, I guess, for lack of a better difficult term, into this market where they have their highest value, their newest value. And then once they, you know, were tapped out in that space, to move them on to another market. And this is a community that is overtly conservative, that is overtly family values. And to think that underneath it all, there is this despicable trade that's second only to arms dealing as far as the type of the size of the industry, I was absolutely devastated that's in my backyard.
It's like child molestation. It's like domestic violence. You know somebody that's in this, you probably don't know it.
Right.
Exactly.
I think it's that pervasive. So, Kristen, give us an overview of how you, for lack of a better term, how do they categorize these things? We have human trafficking, meaning actual slavery. There's like 2 million slaves in the world. There's a component that makes you a sexual slave. There's child molestation, that horrific video you talked about. How do you attack this problem? It's so big. I liked your idea of going after the buyers, so to speak, and the money to stop it. But give me an idea on how you categorize this and put it in a perspective for people to understand how big a problem this is.
Well, you remember, wasn't it in Ohio where the girls were kept slave upstairs?
Right.
Chained. That is not human trafficking because they were not being sold, right? So they would be more sexual slaves.
Okay.
And then you have to have a buyer, whether it's actual money being given back and forth, or even if somebody is sold for a good, like a car or rent or whatever it is, as long as there's a person selling the person for sex to the buyer, and then they're receiving payment in some way, shape, or form, that would be sex trafficking. And the way that we thought that we would hit this thing is in 4 areas with prevention, prosecution, rescue, and restoration. And the way that we say that we do that is prevention. We have this amazing assembly where we go into schools and we tell the kids what's going on out there, not what not to do. We just tell them what's going on, and we try to prevent them from becoming victims. And then we show a dramatization with at-risk kids that have a performing arts piece to their online school. And they come in and they do a whole depiction of what human trafficking is. It's where a little girl gets lured by a boy, and then he turns into a pimp. And so we go in and we speak and we do shows like this and tell what the issue is and try to get people aware and armed to be able to prevent this in their own sphere of influence in their own neighborhoods. And then prosecution, we do a little bit of legislation. And my husband is a cyber investigator. So he's 14 years old online and he talks to predators. He's a little girl. And then with rescue, I'm a private investigator, so I'm able to go out and help identify missing kids and then hand that over to law enforcement. And then restoration is a whole other ball game, because if you've gotten to restoration, then that means they've been victimized, and we don't know how many times they've been sold and what the restoration process is. Have they become the streets? Have they been lured and addicted to drugs and become part of the whole criminal industry? I kind of look at it as, this is just my own perception, it's a criminal industry criminalizing victims to become criminals, but they're still victims. Mm-hmm. And so in that restoration process, we give each survivor a mentor, a therapist, and a case manager, and we have a legal team to help them with legal issues. And you'll understand this. I think is it Christina that was with the Vice unit?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, Christina, they look like delinquents a lot of times, and they don't present as a victim. They look like they're out stealing and robbing and drug addicted. And there's so much beyond that. And so in order for that restoration process, we got to find out what kind of legal situations they're in and put them through programs and rehabilitation programs. And you hit the spiritual, mental, physical, medical, financial problems that are wrapped around these kids and legal age women that have been traffic victims. It's just a huge process. And that's really what it is. It's a process if they've gotten to the part of being victims.
So if you just logged in, we're talking about human trafficking and all kinds of aspects. So make sure you hit your share button. We've had some people do it. Let's get this out there and make sure people are aware. Every share multiplies the viewership. And let's do that while we're speaking. Now, let's break down each one of these components you talked about. Let's talk about prevention. I'm pleasantly surprised that schools let you in the door to talk about it. Is that a hard sell?
Sometimes. But we've gotten to the point where this dramatization that we do, it's incredible. You know how a lot of times when you go to speak to kids, you have to be snapping your fingers saying, wake up out there. When they hear what we have to say, but then see what we're saying come to life, and they can identify with the lure. You know, now that we have phones and touches and people can go online and have a worldwide platform, kids can identify with being lured online. So we bring it to them in a way that they don't want to leave after we're done. So we've gotten a really good reply now from the schools to let us in. It was a little bit of a hard sell at first, but now that we are getting our promos together, they're more apt to let us in because they think that we know what we're talking about.
That's great. That's good. Go ahead.
Well, there's a lot of issues too in the schools that people don't realize. I mean, with these kids, that even pimps, you know, people think of pimps, they're just outside. Like if you think about Hollywood, you think about a pimp, and you think about the purple suits, you think about, you know, basically the car and everything else. But it's not just those type of guys. I mean, a pimp can be anybody in. It could
Another
be a woman,
child,
it could
right?
be a man. Yeah, it could be anything. Yeah. Or they can lure somebody into a certain situation. We've had situations, and I've been at conferences where they've talked about a high school student. You know, there's a group of high school students, and all of a sudden now the girl has a boyfriend, you know, now she's taking pictures and she's giving him the pictures, and all of a sudden now he's using those pictures against her. And now guess what? He's her pimp. And now he's saying, if you don't do these things, I'm going to tell your mom, or I'm going to tell your family, I'm going to tell the school, I'm going to expose you. And now it's a total different dynamic, and now these girls are at their beck and call. And they're basically sneaking out of their house late at night. I mean, it's a problem, and people don't realize it's in our own backyard.
Yeah.
Now, how much of this is organized crime? Because back in the day, that's what we used to think of as organized crime. But are there, you know, with the advent of the internet and your apps and all these things, I mean, do you have independent operators that are 18 years old running their own group of kids? I mean, what's going on with all this stuff?
Well, there's all different levels, like she was talking about. It could be a mom. We have a lot of girls talk about their uncles. You wouldn't believe how many uncles there are all of a sudden. It can be a boyfriend. We had a little girl that was trafficked out of East Central High School here in Tulsa. And her family was illegal, Mexican family. And so that was an easy mark for this kid because he lured her with love, got her on drugs. And his threat was that he would tell that they were illegal citizens. And they didn't understand that wasn't going to matter to law enforcement. they're not going to care if they're illegal citizens or not. They're going to care if there's a crime against that child.
Exactly.
And so she went through hell. She saw murder. They would go to school in the day, traffic them at night, go to a local bar. That's where the buyers would come. And this was a gang. We see a lot of the Irish mob and the cartel here. That's a lot.
That's
of
interesting.
Is involved. Huh. Yeah. I can't tell you what's in your location. The vice unit could tell you, Homeland Security could tell you what's going on in your neighborhood, but I know for sure here it is the Irish mob and the cartel.
Very interesting.
So as a homemaker, you know, my daughter's four, I'm a little more sensitive to to sexual abuse, just within the home. I'm an incest survivor. That's something that it has been something that I've really pushed back on, and with her, have taught her it's her body, right? Even if I'm tickling her too much, for her to say stop, red light, for her to really know that it's her body and to be empowered to protect herself. But in this case, outside of the home, I know my daughter's very young at four, but how, Kristen, in your mind, ought I prepare her to be in the world when she's at school and, these outside influences may be there and want to take advantage of her?
Yeah, that's a great question, because we have two kids and we've been focused on that their whole life. So we started out by, they had to be thrown into all of this because of what we do, which sometimes is a bad thing, but most of the time it's a great thing because they can learn those boundaries. So we set up boundaries with our kiddos. The way that we touch them, we tell them about their private areas, and the way that we touch them, nobody else should go cross those boundaries because we don't. And so we got them used to putting up boundaries. And when, as they grow, then you close down and build certain boundaries as a child. And we started off, I remember talking to my little girl when she was really young about simply a kiss. And how nobody deserves to have a kiss unless you have agreed to give them a kiss. Mm. I remember one time Santa Claus came up to my little girl and gave her a hug, and he didn't ask permission. And I was not very happy about it. And after he let go of her, I let her know immediately, you never have to let anybody give you a hug or give you a kiss unless it's that you give them approval. So I started out real small with them, but as they grew, obviously, we started talking very candid about sex. We have no problem talking to our kids about sex and boundaries. And I think that families probably need to do that a little bit more. I think people are too afraid to cross that line with their kids of just simply talking to them and preparing them for what's going on. If you're not talking to your kids, somebody else will be talking to them online.
Exactly.
The word penis and vajayjay.
School.
Penis and vajayjay was used in my house very early on, much to the chagrin of my wife. At the dinner table, we brought these things up in frank discussions and say, if somebody pulls their penis out, that's a see you later, pal, all right? And, we didn't make fun of it. It was serious, but we also made ourselves receptive to our children to talk about it.
Yeah.
And we had a couple incidents where my kids were approached, and nothing went further than that, but they knew what was going on. So it's very effective to be candid.
Yeah.
I think,
sure. And I think I think my husband and I have done a good job of establishing that candor, even at this young age. Again,
yeah, we
use hoo-ha and all that. We use different language.
A wee.
We use different language. But the motivation for us has always been, we don't want someone to push you further than you want to go.
Exactly.
Right. It's sort of like people have different needs or wants or what have you, and you need to be able to decide for yourself what you need and want. But these are real bad actors with a nefarious goal to profit off of young girls or boys. I mean, it's not just young girls, but
exactly,
there was in the statistics that I saw, there was a gender disparity, but it obviously doesn't, it's not solely about girls, but largely.
Yeah.
That was a completely different angle. I hadn't thought about that at all.
No, I know. Our discussion was about familiar.
Right, familiar
molestation,
people.
Right? It's the teacher, it's the uncle.
Well, they call it stranger danger, and then all of a sudden now it's home.
Right.
It's at home.
So to Kristen's point, and maybe you can touch back on this, I've had interviews with people, women send emails or contact me. I know a lot of women. I forget what the number is.
It's one in four.
I think it's more than that, frankly.
Reported. One in four reported.
Well, yeah, I think it's way, most women I know have been molested some way, right? And a lot of it's a familiar thing. It's, I mean, I knew somebody that was passed around by their uncle to other uncles and other people. And it was just all normal stuff, right? Cultural, normal. So, Kristen, how do you guard against, I think we have a good chance of guarding against familiar contact. You know, the second some weird uncle or party walked up to my daughter and put her hand around her, I would, that's it. It's over, pal. Kick the shit out of them. We're done with that problem. But how do you guard against an abduction? How do you guard against brute force, you know, kidnapping and things like that?
Or even the luring on the internet.
Or I another mean, kid's
internet
parent.
I can work
it
with.
It could be anything. Or, I mean, it I could be at a baby, you know, yeah. Like if you're, like my mom did not let us sleep over anyone's house when we were kids.
Yeah, me neither.
And nowadays, people let their kids sleep everywhere, not knowing who the parent is, who the kids, right. The kids are, who's right. In that household.
No, it's funny. So, all the kids slept at our house.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Everyone wanted to my house. With, right.
Exactly.
But I wouldn't let it go anywhere else.
But that's the thing. People are going to houses not knowing who's actually in that house. And the next thing you know, yeah. Your child's coming home acting differently, not telling you what's happening because something has just happened in that house.
In my super safe Orange County community, thank you so much.
Which isn't, I know.
Right? No, I moved my family to Orange County because of good schools and safe neighborhoods and all of that stuff. And what?
So, Kristen, talk to us about this this thing where family members are crossing this line between, just not a good way to say this, I mean, child molestation and trafficking. Does this happen a lot within families?
Yes.
I would think it would be somebody grabbing you in a van and saying, see you later. But really, you're talking about parents selling kids? Is this happening in the United States?
Yes.
Yeah, we don't really see a whole lot of just taking kids.
Okay.
And it really doesn't have to happen that way anymore when you have the internet and you have pornography on the internet so rampant. You don't have to go to the CD adult bookstore anymore. You can just watch it right there on the screen. My husband, as I said, does the cyber investigation, and it's unreal. He was just doing, we just had a summit this past week, and he did a live demonstration for the law enforcement that was there to show them how quick it was for a 14-year-old to go online, a little girl, and how many hits he would get of guys trying to pick her up. And these were like 35, 45, 55-year-old men trying to pick up this little 14-year-old. It was like instantaneous. The minute he said, hey, I'm home by myself. And it was 9:30 in the morning on a Friday morning, and he just got hit after hit. So I think a lot of what you guys were talking about with online, they just not a lot of taken. You can give your kids self-defense classes, and you can talk to them about if somebody tries to grab you, scream, or if you feels like you're being followed, run the opposite way if they're in a car, because then they have to turn around and come and get you. Be ready with, you know, your keys in your hand or whatever it might be, or walk in pairs. You can say all that stuff, but we can't really get them completely prepared for if somebody was going to take them. However, with online enticement, there's a lot of different safety measures that we can take as parents. And we have our kids on a program called Teen Safe. And there's other programs out there. But what that program does is that it, at the end of the night, when I plug their tech, when I charge it, all of their data downloads into this program. And then I'm able to see where they went on text, if they had deleted text, if they went places online, whatever it is, I can see what they've been doing. It's almost like I'm following behind them on a path and see if they've gone to inappropriate places and then have conversations with them. So we may never get totally ahead and in front of them with tech because of how fast it's emerging, but we can at least stay just kind of behind them and try to catch up to them.
Now, does that work with Google Chrome Incognito, where supposedly your history is not recorded on Google?
It's supposed to work that way, okay. Where it shows what's going on
no matter
on it.
What, right.
Now, it doesn't show pictures or video, which I don't like.
Isn't there? There are actually, in fact, I remember some that actually show pictures and videos. There are actually some apps out there, some applications that you can put on your phone or on your computer that will get pictures and video and can help you with that too if you're a parent. If they people
yeah,
will,
that's really yeah. important.
Yeah, exactly.
So controlling content. I mean, even at four, but, we make sure that whatever our daughter's looking at online, that we see what it is. If I see a video that I don't like, something that she's looking at, we have the kid, whatever the kid's YouTube. It's not even scandalous. It's just, you want to know what that content, let's watch something else.
It's difficult to be a parent.
But you have to be there. She does not have access to the internet, to any of that.
There's really no reason.
Without me.
But you got to think about also, just because you think your kid is on their computer or on their phone does not necessarily mean they're not looking on someone else's computer or someone else's phone when they're visiting people at someone else's house or the school or libraries or whatever. Mm-hmm. The thing is, in fact, there's a case where a friend of mine actually, it was her niece. Basically, she was on the internet talking to this guy. All of a sudden, she and her family just didn't get along. She ended up sneaking out, meeting this guy. Guy thought she was 18 years old, at least he claimed. She went with him. As soon as he found out she wasn't, supposedly he said he sent her on her way. She went to the bus stop somewhere in the Greyhound of their, I think it was out with Metro. It was a Metro in downtown LA. She actually got stopped by the police, was basically given a citation, but she was already reported missing. But they just gave her a citation. And the next thing you know, the father's calling us saying, can you please help out? Can you investigate this? So I got her password. I figured out what her password was. I mean, I started looking into things. We got her on her computer, found a bunch of stuff. She ended up meeting some other person, and that person became her pimp. He started drugging her up. And basically now he was also bribing the father. He called the father and said, blackmailing him, if you don't give me this much money, I'm going to kill your daughter or whatever. We ended up getting the police involved, ended up finding where he was, and ended up arresting him. But it was this whole thing. She trusted a guy and went from that guy to now she's on the street. Now it's this whole – I mean, it's a big, big thing right now.
So, Kristen, give us your organization website again.
It's thedemandproject.org.
.org. Make sure you guys look at that, take a look. And I assume you have some donation buttons on there somewhere?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So this is a good worthy cause for you guys to take a look at that while we're – well, let's not log off Security Guy Radio quite yet. But if you have two browsers, you can look at their website and watch the show at the same time and take a look at that and donate some money to a worthy cause. Now, we've been talking about prevention, and I love this school thing, getting in the schools, getting early. I mean, back in the day when I was a cop, when I did a child molestation case, you had two dolls anatomically correct. And you're like, now, what did it look like? You know what? I think kids are way smarter back then. I think they're way smarter now. And I think just being direct, polite, using proper language – at an early age, gets them to understand and respect their bodies, like you're doing, Hillary. Exactly. And I don't think we need to be, you know, kind of sketchy.
I don't want to scare her.
Well, but I don't think it scares them. I think they're informed, and I think that's self-empowerment.
Yep.
And they feel like I can do something.
Power, exactly.
But there's a line on that. I get what you're saying. So let's talk about prosecution, because this is what I don't get. You see these cases in the news all the time. Oh, this guy raped his daughter. He got 6 months.
Okay, what?
And this guy got 25 years because he did a 314, that's a indecent exposure in California. I mean, there's no consistency on this, Christina. Do you find this in Oklahoma?
Yeah, we do. And part of the problem here is that the DAs won't take the cases for state cases. All of our human trafficking cases are going federal. And so we just had this summit, and we had the lieutenant governor, the U.S. Attorney's Office, VICE, Homeland Security, the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics and Human Trafficking, OSBI. We had all these people come together because we wanted to talk about how we can actually get this to a state level. And the girls, boys that are victims don't identify as victims. So I think it's hard for the DAs to want to take the cases because they're not sure how they can win the cases. But I heard a really intelligent investigator. I think he was out of Indianapolis. I'm not sure. But his take on this was show what the crime has done to them instead of making them making the victim be the whole case. Instead of revolving the whole thing around the victim, revolve it around the crime and show what the crime has done to the victims. And don't pretty them up and doctor them up and think that you can't make a case. We had a vice agent actually arrest a pimp, and it went federal, and the girl, the victim, testified on behalf of her pimp because she was in love with him, but he still got busted. So you can build the case around the crime versus the victim, just like you would do in a domestic violence case. They don't usually present as a victim very often either. So we have issues here as well. And then you also have pimping and pandering that was a low-level misdemeanor crime, but you got a crime of prostitution that holds a felony charge. So you got girls with fines and fees and jail time, and then you've got a pimp that gets right off, and then he can bail his girl out and go and pick her up. It's very twisted.
Are they going RICO on these things under Fed law? Because that's the way I'd do it. These are criminal.
They're criminal enterprises.
It's a criminal enterprise. Yep. Yeah,
they're actually going towards that. We had a gal come and speak on RICO cases specifically for this at the summit.
Yeah. So I see your point. So you know, those are traditionally low level misdemeanor crimes, being a pimp, prostitution, blah blah blah. So maybe Oklahoma laws haven't caught up with some of these higher.
Well, we have great laws, actually. We have really good laws. They're just not being used. A law doesn't matter if it's not being used.
I don't know. I mean, when we were cops, we just wrote up a good report. And by the way, if the DA is not prosecuting it, nothing against my brothers and sisters, but that means they didn't get a very good police report. So is it the police level where the police aren't really trained to investigate these things properly or what?
I think that has a bit of it. And that was another focus that we had the summit for, is we wanted to get it into law enforcement's head, a traffic stop versus a trafficking stop. Mm-hmm. So how to identify that there's a situation if you pull a car over, because patrol are going to be the first responders.
Always. Yep, exactly. Right. And by the way,
what are they going to identify when they pull this car over? Are they going to, my husband, he would pull a car over and then he'd start asking questions because he knew what to look for. A normal patrol officer is going to write a ticket and go on down the road. So we're just trying to get them to identify if there's two guys in the car in the front seat and you've got three minors in the back seat and something looks suspicious, you need to start asking questions.
Well, and you have a lot of leeway as a police officer with a child.
Yeah.
You can go into houses. You can do all kinds of things. That's a little exception in the search and seizure. Oh, hey, Alicia, from my fellow police officer from Culver City is watching. We had the authority from Culver City Police to make probable cause arrests. That means if I think a felony has been committed, whether one's been committed or not, I can arrest you if the reasonable, prudent person would say, you know what, that looks like a bank robbery. That looks like child molestation. I'm going to put you in jail, and I got 72 hours to go prove it, see? And outside California, I'm not sure a lot of states do probable cause arrests. That's a great tool to get people in to investigate. So if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck, it's a duck until you figure out what exactly is happening with that. So I have a comment here on the Facebook page that somebody attended your class and they thought it was great.
Awesome. You know, yeah, it was really awesome.
Yeah. So we have to start. You are preventing these things at the child level in the elementary schools, right? So is there a prevention component that we need to get into the police departments with? In other words, the police need to be educated as much, you know, to prevent.
Right, because someone's not going to say, I'm being sexually misused here. It's not going to be in bold print in neon. So how do they identify it?
Well, I was always a nosy asshole as a policeman. I asked you so many questions. What do you mean you're asking me if that's my daughter? That's none of your business. Mm-hmm. Hey, dickhead, I don't care. I'm going to ask anyway. I don't care if you're offended. A lot of people now in this atmosphere don't want to offend citizens, don't want to say something that's going to offend people. And I don't think cops are as nosy as maybe we used to be.
Well, I think also things have changed nowadays.
It's changed.
The officers are so afraid now to do a lot of things because they're afraid of getting sued, afraid of, you know, like there's so much. The dynamics definitely have changed. But I also think back in the days, I mean, when officers saw a prostitute, they assumed, oh, she's a prostitute. She wants to do this. It's not she's being sold to do this. She's being forced to do this. There's so many other dynamics, and I think if we take the time and get the training for these officers to let them know, look further into this. This could lead to this. This could lead to a bigger arrest in the future and stop something from happening. You might be getting to the house that they're actually, you know, keeping these kids. I mean, it's a matter of looking more into it and investigating things.
Christina, when I was at I was at Fox, the internet came of age, and we had an executive who had something called a DVD. And what is that? What's a DVD? Mm-hmm. I didn't know what that was because we got those things first, right? And something came in with a complaint about something in a witness office. And this guy had hundreds and hundreds of DVDs, and they're all porn, right? And we didn't know what to do about that because you can't have porn inside a broadcast facility. It's like literally an FCC violation of the law or something, right? Because, you know, some guy, some engineer says, hey, pop the disc in. Oops. And, you know, it happens, right?
Yeah.
And it took us a while when we prosecuted cases like this, and we had a lot of people. One executive was, this is a weird story, and this goes to your luring people in, Kristen. He was a producer, and he would send out these emails and things soliciting kids, like 14, 15-year-old girls, to do commercials. And what he would say is, I'm doing a Nike commercial, and we'd be interested in casting you, but we need to get your shoe size because we're doing a customized Nike. We're going to make it just for your foot. So send me your nylons that you've worn for a week.
What?
So I can take the foot imprint off that, right? And then I'll make a mold. And guess what? This went on for years until some lady in Texas called me and said, you know, this seems kind of weird. I said, you know what? It kind of seems weird to me too. Let's get into that. She's the only lady that ever called us about it. Then we set up a sting, and the guy was going out meeting girls in Huntington Beach or Redondo Beach or something. And he, in other words, he progressed from emails and letters to let's go meet, put him in jail. The studio would not let me report him. He went to work for CBS. He might still be there today. And his excuse was, I said, dude, so you like feet. So what? What's this 14-year-old thing? Can't you get a 25-year-old or something? What's this weird stuff? I don't know. My wife became pregnant. I just had this weird thing happen and blah, blah, blah. And this guy, I don't really think he got prosecuted because the studio didn't want a bad name. So my question is, do you see this kind of thing where, yeah, they're not prosecuting because they don't get it. Are you seeing people getting off on this stuff because, you know, well, it's too complicated. Let's release him. Let's not prosecute. Is that happening?
I would think so. I think that's more of Jason's area where he does the online enticement, or he's online and he's talking to the predators. So I know that he's had some pretty high level people that he's talked to online, and it's taken years for it to get anywhere. I think it is really hard when you have people in certain situations of power and authority. It is really hard for it not to be just something they want to sweep under the rug.
Yeah.
And I think it was more of a just being a guy type of thing back in the day. But I think with the internet and with child pornography being so prevalent, I think things are changing. I do think that we're going to make strides that way, but I don't think we're quite there yet.
Yeah, it's birds of a feather, right? There used to be.
Absolutely.
What's that organization, Kristen? NAMBLA?
NAMBLA.
Oh, NAMBLA?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, sex before eight or it's too late and all this weird crap to do.
Yeah, they teach them. They groom them to be predators.
Yeah. And these are, you know, these are all people that are. It doesn't just affect, you know, the guy that lives in the impoverished area. This is all across the board, right? Exactly. But by the way, you need money to buy people for slaves, don't you? Right. Yeah. So this is, you're going to see this at upper levels too.
The wheels of power will forgive a lot of things if you're bringing in the bottom line.
Well, and, you know, so it goes before, who's that crazy judge that released that guy who had molested a kid? They gave him 6 weeks in jail or something. It was back east last year. And everybody just went, what? You know, so you got to wonder, is that guy part of these societies?
Yeah.
That it lets his brain say, oh, this makes sense, and I'm not going to prosecute him.
Well, the judge who gave only 6 months to the guy who raped the girl who was unconscious behind dumpster.
Exactly.
Six months, for real?
Yeah.
You know?
And people have to realize it's not just girls, it's boys. It's young boys.
There's a lot of young boys,
It's both genders. It's basically, it's disgusting. You can, like I said, your husband is the cyber tech. He's seen everything, and he can tell people, I mean, you want to buy something, guess what? You go on there, you'll find it. And, you know, there's no holds bar on that. If you want it, you're going to find it.
You know,
and they're not afraid. They honestly, they'll go on there and they'll test the waters. And they're very, it's more like an adrenaline rush for these guys. Because even though they know they might get caught, they still are on there and still see what they can find.
So what's the psychology behind this, Kristen, if you know? I'll get 1 second, Harley.
That's fine.
So if you molest, you probably were molested. That's kind of prevalent in the you know, psychology of the culture of those people, kind of thing, right? Is there something different here? In other words, if I'm a child, if I buy kids, was I molested? Or am I just some crazy, different sort of guy than those people? You know what I'm saying?
Well, expert, but from what experience would tell me, is now that there's the internet's like the shopping mall of pornography, and you can do it in your own home, and you can see any type of scenario that you could ever think about or never even imagine, and it's all free. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to be 18 years old or older anymore. You don't have to show who you are, and everything gives you what, a 30 second to a minute little view of pornography, and you can find young girls. I feel like it has created almost an epidemic of pornaholics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like that puts all of our children at risk. It's rewiring men. And from what Jason would tell me is that some of the horrible things about pornography and watching it online is that it doesn't just rewire you, but I feel like this young generation being brought up in this are going to think that some of these acts that they're watching are going to be acceptable exactly. if they're in a relationship, and it's going to desensitize them because us three women right here aren't going to do anything that they're watching.
I don't agree with that. I actually don't agree
with
that.
Hold on. Anybody that says, like the studio executives to say, well, there's no correlation between violence and TV and kids. They're full of crap. They don't have a kid or a TV, right?
I get it, but I'm not a Puritan. Right. If somebody is of age and they enjoy watching consensual sex with others, I don't have a problem with that.
We're not talking about that, though.
No, but she's talking about rewiring the brain for a certain type of sexual act that of us in the room aren't going to do. As long as it's two consenting adults, I don't care what sexual act you're going to do.
Well, hold on.
As long as you're not taking it's the problem is the lack of consent and minors.
But you don't know. You can't tell watching pornography if that person who could be 17 is consenting. You just can't tell.
Well, in theory, there should be compliance codes.
Would have, could have, should have. Yeah. What I'm saying is, so my biggest problem was stealing my dad's Playboy magazine, okay, out of his sock drawer. That was pornography back then, right? I have a healthy attitude of sex and women. I think sex is great. I agree with you 100%. Two consenting people, everything's fine, right? The problem is when my son grows up and starts looking at this stuff, I went out of my way to keep him off it and, secretly give him a Playboy magazine subscription because, boy, that's nothing compared to the stuff that's out there. You've seen some investigations. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just make you hurl. It's just, and I don't talk about morality. I'm just talking about sick stuff, right? So I think the problem is, like to Kristen's point, you can look at this stuff and there can be a blur to say, well, if it's on TV, I believe it. Look at how many people believe what they see on TV.
Mm-hmm. Terrifying. Mm-hmm.
So your brain goes to, it's there. It must be real. Somebody put it up there. It must be validated. And I think there's a line there. I think it's important to keep the kids out of this weird crap. I mean,
there's a guy, Dr. David Grossman. He talks
about 17-year-olds or a 17-year-old look at Lolita, whatever they call it, Lolita stuff with kids, and that's all over the place, right?
But I grew up in the 80s in LA. There was all kinds of pornography all around. It didn't change.
Yeah, and the newspaper stamp, but not on your phone.
But we didn't have a phone.
But I think
obviously it's matching up with the technology.
But I really think technology, like she said, has changed the dynamics of what kids now think is love or what sex is supposed to be.
That's the responsibility of the parents.
Responsibility of the parent to kind of talk to your kids about sex or certain things.
Contextualize it.
But at the same time, just because your parent tells you, or maybe they don't tell you, if you're watching something and you're constantly watching that same thing over and over again and you've never been in a relationship, guess what? And now you're in a relationship, you're going to think that's the norm. You're going to think that forcing yourself on somebody or doing certain things is the norm because you've never been told otherwise.
I think it's two separate things. I think saying one thing is the norm and forcing someone are two very different things. The bottom line for me personally, obviously maybe separate, different in this room, is consent. And a child can't give consent. A 17-year-old cannot give consent. So if we're talking about consensual acts between adults, I'm not going to be in the puritanical business of telling people what they can and can't watch. That being said, I will protect my daughter from those images while she is a child and until she's 18 and legally can consent, and even then would suggest against it. But that's my responsibility as a parent, not as a society, to say this is inherently wrong.
But I think what she's also trying to say is not why you're saying that don't watch something. It's as you get older, even you start looking at something and in your mind you are almost rewiring certain things because you're seeing it over and over and over again. And at the same time, I think that as a guy or a girl, sometimes I think if you see something done a certain way, even though you don't think you're doing it, you might be in a relationship and those little things might be coming out because you think that that's what somebody wants or that's somebody. And it's not talking about forcing something. It could just be even being more forceful in a different way, not at least forcing yourself on somebody. But I mean, there's, what you see on porn, it could affect somebody and change the way they are in a relationship.
Watch the microphone, Christine. Should you stay on the microphone? Oh, okay. So, I mean, the question is, are you hardwired this way to have that you like sex and kids? Are you hardwired that way to start? Or do you see it and become hardwired? That's chicken and egg kind of thing, right? So it's hard to say. The best thing is just to kind of, like you say, introduce things to your kids, make sure you understand what real is and what respectful is and things like that.
Yeah. So, it is case by case. And Jason had a case once where there was a guy that was so addicted to watching porn that he had built himself, like child porn, that he had built himself his own little area where he pooped and peed where he was at. Yeah. He had cigarette stuff all around. He had food everywhere. And he had this bucket of just disgust because he would not leave. He got so addicted to it. And I'm not saying everybody would, but the more you watch something and the more desensitized that you get, mm-hmm. the younger you're going to have to go to get the same stimulation as before is what we're seeing.
So the moderation and bring in anything.
Bestiality and different things in that, you've got young girls in trouble when this guy wants to go and do it for real.
So talk about I think you mentioned it briefly, but how these kids now become participants willingly. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you call it brainwashing, indoctrination, whatever you want to call it. How prevalent is this? I mean, is there a certain point where if you've been a child indoctrinated into this for 2-3 years, click, that's it, you can't be saved? Or what's going on with that part of it? That goes to your rescue part, right? And redemption.
Yeah, let me tell you like one of our scenarios. We had a little girl when she was 12 years old. Her dad was never in her life, and her mom was a drug addict. Her drug of choice was to shoot up embalming fluid.
What? And,
yeah. And this little girl, I guess it goes with PCP. And so this little girl never had her dad in her life until she was about 12 years old. And at 12 years old, dad comes into the picture, but unfortunately he's a pimp and she's a beautiful young girl. And so he sees an opportunity. So he takes that opportunity to have his daughter at, 12, 13, 14 years old, start to work with him on getting girls, recruiting girls for him. Well, she has a friend and this friend is dating her brother. And so dad likes the son's girlfriend and tells his daughter to get her into the crew and that her job is to supervise her and to make sure she does what she's told to do. So she starts supervising the girl and acting as a recruiter, supervisor, manager. So she's feeling pretty important because dad has now taken notice of her. Well, it's such a long story and just horrific how dad beats his daughter and she sees that as love. He gets her addicted to drugs. He starts a sexual relationship with her, all the while having her run his crew. And she is now when we finally found her, she was just a broken mess because you not only have a scenario where she ends up being trafficked, but she ends up being trafficked by her dad. And she ends up having a sexual relationship with dad. So she thinks she's in love with him and he's in love with her. So you've got physical abuse, domestic violence, you've got rape, you've got trafficking, you've got drug addiction. So in order for us to unravel that, we had to remove her. She had gotten busted for some crimes that she had committed while she was with her trafficker that was her dad. And he got busted. And so when we came into this, it was to help her get drug rehab and help her to get, just start going through the basic things that a young girl should be thinking about with her education and life skills and relationship skills. And her education was so bad because nobody ever made her do anything. Nobody ever made her do the basic things. She had no structure in her life because her dad was the predator. And so, the brother's girlfriend that she was running, she ended up getting trafficked across the United States in four, five, six different states. And unraveling all of her trauma was about the same as this girl. So the rescue part can happen, but then that restoration is such a process. We're not very successful in the front end. It takes a long time to have a success, whatever success means, to the child. We just hope that she's free. She's getting an education. She's getting therapy if she needs it, which they all do. She's getting rehab if she needs it. So it's such a process.
You don't hear too much about you hear about rescue, right? But you don't hear too much about the restoration.
Yeah.
It took me about 10 years of therapy pretty consistently.
10 years, wow.
Oh, yeah. To sort out what happened to me as a kid and to be able to not view my life through that lens. It took me a long time to do that, but it's totally possible and can have a, my husband and I will be married 10 years. We have a beautiful daughter. I'm able to really prepare her for the world, which I think is also, it sounds like what Kristen is saying about this 12-year-old, that she didn't have that solid family life, mm-hmm. that foundation, and how important that is in prevention to just be present with your kids.
Exactly.
teach, you know, give them the kind of foundation so that these that they're not as vulnerable to these types of attacks.
Did you view your family unit as, besides this incident, otherwise?
Oh, it wasn't an incident. It was several years of repeated.
Oh, no, I understand that. Yeah. But I mean, right. But did you find the family unit outside of that normal in some way?
I mean, I had no frame of reference, so that's kind of hard for me to say now. Yeah, it's not like these guys. Now.
Yeah, not like no, crazy
family.
No, oh
yeah, I mean, beautiful pictures and, you know, everything from, no one would have ever known from the outside that we had these kind of problems inside. Even, you know, my mom wasn't really fully aware of what was happening until much later. It's, you know, those things are tricky. I think if I had the kind of awareness, you know, maybe 21st century awareness would have been different than it was in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, I can't say for certain.
More resources now for people to
more
go to.
More resources now, less stigma. There are more organizations. DARE is going, you know, people are going into the schools, like this wonderful organization is going into the schools and talking to kids. That stuff just wasn't there for me.
Well, I must say, I've known you a long time, and until you told me that story, I never would have had any clue about that.
I mean, don't lead with it. I'm not embarrassed about it. Right. I'm not afraid to talk about it, but I don't lead with it.
No, I know. But I mean, you know, you do meet people in this business. We've met some as police officers that are just, they're long gone. I mean, that's not going to come back to normal no matter what happened to them, whether it be this sort of thing or drugs or whatever, you know. So it's possible to come back and recover.
Absolutely.
I mean,
I worked in a school, and in the school that I was working at, I had an office, and, you know, it's so weird. I didn't realize how many kids had been molested until I sat there, and I swear I felt like a priest one day. I was sitting there, and all of a sudden these kids started coming in the office, and I would have candy set up in my office, and they'd come in and they're like, hey, how much is that? I'm like, oh, it's free. And all of a sudden they'd go from the candy to getting closer and closer, now sitting down next to me and near my desk talking to me about their life. And all of a sudden it would go from they've been molested by their uncle, by their father, and I couldn't believe how many kids have been molested in that school.
Yeah, I was when I was a boy, when I say boy, I don't know, like, you know, 10-ish to 14 or whatever I'm called. I was approached several times by men, and nobody ever tried to put a hand on me because I was 6 feet tall since I was 12 years old, right? So I think I had a little advantage. Mm-hmm. But on a bus one time, you know, some guy sat next to me and started asking me questions about stuff. I'm like, dude, no thanks. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was trained like you were by my parents to say, hey, that's not right. But it's much more prevalent than people think it is, you know, I think for sure.
But that's good that you got to bring it to the schools, like you said, because back in the days, it wasn't prevalent. I mean, we didn't have people talking about this in the school. They talked about stranger danger, but it was totally different. It was about strangers. It wasn't about your family or uncles or friends or anything like that. At the same time, they didn't tell you what to do or how to get out of a situation or who to talk to. So it's really good that you guys are coming in. And do you guys speak at, for the parents too, like do PTA meetings? And
yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Do the parents attend the in-class training with the children? Were they allowed to?
Sometimes, yeah. We always encourage it because we don't, I mean, as we want to get kids armed themselves because they're the ones that are on their own front line of their own war. I mean, we're not always going to be there with them. So we want the kids to hear this firsthand, but we need the parents there to be backing it up and supporting them and making sure they're watching what they're doing online. We didn't have social media. I didn't have a worldwide platform when I was 12 years old. And so to think of somebody having that worldwide platform is pretty scary at such a young age. And to the molestation, this crime takes that step further because it's not just a single predator, single incidence or molestation where it's happening years on end. Bring in drug addiction and domestic violence and being out on the street and running the streets and committing these petty crimes and being busted. And it's like a tsunami of crimes against these kids. And they're not mentally prepared to handle all of these crimes coming at them at one time. And they have so much power because they're the ones being sold as a product, but their power is being completely stripped by the pimp that's selling them. So it's really a mixed message going on with these kids and these adults that are wrapped up in this. And to the boy part, we don't see many boys. We have some that we have seen that are being trafficked, but it's harder to identify a boy because he's most likely not going to identify as a victim.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
And,
that's true.
And if he can get down the road and turn the corner, he's going to end up to be possibly a pimp himself. Mm-hmm. Like if he can get past being trafficked and he can learn the ropes, then he can traffic
other people. It's so sad. Unbelievable.
It's so sad.
Well, Kristen, I appreciate your work on this.
Thank you, Kristen.
I'm so glad this is happening. Give us your website and how we can contact you, how we can donate to the cause, the Demand Project.
Yes, it's at thedemandproject.org. And if you go to Get Involved and the Donate button, you can give, and it will go to the four programs, either Prevention, Prosecution, Rescue, or Restoration. And we are privately funded. We're a non-government organization. And the way that we keep going is by people like you out there listening, and you care about what we're doing. And we're not just in Oklahoma. We're a national organization trying to spread this thing out and become a model in the United States. So if you're interested in donating or becoming part of the Demand Project, all you have to do is contact us at thedemandproject.org, and we'll do our best to get into your neighborhood and your city, your town, wherever we can to help you in fighting child sex trafficking.
Kristen Wise.
Kristen, actually, do you have a number that people can call also anonymously to talk about? They have somebody that possibly could be. Yeah, tip line.
It'd be better if they just emailed at thedemandproject.org, and then, you can email us at contact@thedemandproject.org, and we will get back to them.
Okay, perfect.
Good point. Good to know. Well, Kristen, thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
Now, I did in our pre-show video, Miss Hillary.
Yes.
I did show the Romeo and Juliet plaque.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I did say you're not a courtesan anymore, and I gave you all that. But let's talk about it again. Hillary is in.
Yes. I will be in Romeo and Juliet opening February 18th at the Archway Studio Theater in North Hollywood. It's a very exciting group. Our Romeo and Juliet are just the most beautiful couple. They look so good. Our Romeo is Hal Holbrook's grandson.
Oh, really?
Holbrook, yep.
Oh, interesting.
He's so talented. And our Juliet is Miss Keela Ryan, another amazing talent. She played Ophelia in our Hamlet last year. I'm so impressed with these young people, and I'm very excited to participate. Nice. Playing Lady Capulet is an honor in the canon for me. So,
have to go see.
I'm thrilled.
The mother-in-law. She's the mother-in-law.
No, yes. I'm the mother, Juliet's mother.
But you're somebody else's potential mother-in-law.
Of course. Isn't everybody somebody's potential mother-in-law at some point?
Now, I've not been inside the theater, but it's very near my house.
Yes.
And shame on me for not driving down there.
Yes.
But even with my infirm foot, I will get down there to see
you. Thank you.
But I used to go to a lot of theater when I was young, on Simi Valley. And
This theater's really
this
good.
This is great stuff for
the
people.
The content of what we're doing at this theater is really special. It's at a next level. I'm really honored to be a resident company member at the Archway, and you can find us at archwayla.com.
Yeah, and if you've not gone to a small theater, it's really a good several hours to spend your time doing, instead of some crappy movie that's not worth it.
And this is a story that people have been telling for hundreds of
classic.
Years.
That's
it's a
right.
classic. Yeah. There's a reason for it.
And I want to jump in this because I'm actually involved in a charity that's coming up.
Yeah, let's
hear
about
that. It's called Reality Rally. It's going to be in Temecula, and it raises money for breast cancer.
Oh, Temecula's a cool
place.
Yes,
it's beautiful. And so in April, it's going to be, if you want to go on www.realityrally.com, you can actually go under my picture and donate under my name. It's going to be a bunch of different people from reality shows, and we're raising money for Michelle's Place, which gives free mammograms, and it's a resource center for breast cancer.
Wow, that's fabulous.
So it's an incredible event. It's like amazing race, and we're with the public and in the town, and it's pretty awesome. So if you can go on www.realityrally.com and go under Christina Coria from Survivor and donate some money, that'd be awesome.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Very good. Nice. And Security Guy Radio, just send me some free money if you have any laying around. Well, I'm starting the studio. I got the studio down the hall here all hooked up, but with my poor little foot, I can't quite finish it. But once it's done, we'll be doing more shows outside the UBN schedule, still be with UBN. But we want to do maybe 5 days a week, different types of shows, and then we're going to rent it. So if you're a still photographer, I got a whole backdrop set up in there. I got a green screen set up. We can do video interviews. If you're doing casting calls, you can come in, and it's all soundproofed. It's be a lot of fun. So that's what Security Guy Radio is working on this year, to get more content out there for people.
Get healthy first, Chuck.
I got to get going by March, because I got to start my all those trade shows I go to. Yeah, all that stuff. So I got to get going, because my little
You are adorable with your cart, gotta say. There's a certain charm. There's a certain charm about
it. You're pretty fast on that.
Should I use it as a social prop then? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely,
all
yes.
Right, I'll work on it.
Yes, work that angle. Yeah, speed racer.
Yeah, in the frozen food section. And I'll work on the frozen food section in the grocery store. Oh, you poor thing, what happened? Well, let me tell you the story. All right, 1 minute, Mr. Jarvis. We'll go out early. Mr. Jarvis, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to Security Guy Radio. Check out that website for the project and donate to that cause. And tune in next week for another interesting, at least interesting, version of Security Guy Radio. And thanks for coming in, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Good night.
Jack. Good night.
We'll be right back.